Hey, everybody. Welcome to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dan Leo, and with me is...
Robert Mecki, the other host.
Yes, host A and host B. We're doing A-B testing. Please, God help us.
Vote for your favorite host after the show.
Yes, please send in all your letters to me, Donald Trump. All right. Enough of that. Let us get right into it. First, let's talk about the box office, I guess. Deadpool 2 came in first with $125 million, knocking off Avengers, which came in at $29 million. And then Book Club, a mom movie, came in at third at $13 million. I am not surprised by any of this.
Yeah. The only question I have is, was this a bigger opening than the first Deadpool?
It was not. It's $10 million less.
Wow. That's pretty surprising.
Yeah, but I'm not so sure if it is. Because if you think about, like, the first one came out in February.
Yeah, it didn't have as much competition. Like, it's literally going up against the biggest movie in the world at the moment. That's true.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got people who are kind of... I think people who saw Avengers and then they may be going to see it again still.
Yeah.
And then you got people who are waiting to see Solo coming out this week. So I think it takes place in a much a market where there's a lot more things to choose from.
Yeah. Super saturated box office this May. But it's a good time. Yeah. It's fun.
it's a good time. It's raining in Chicago, so...
Perfect. Man, it is kind of interesting. I wonder how the studio feels about this, because the budget for this movie was, I think, $110 million, which is almost twice that of the initial budget.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot. But I mean, I still think, like, what, Deadpool 1 is the second highest grossing R-rated movie of all time?
I thought it was the... Oh, maybe Logan beat it. Yeah, I think Logan might have beat it. But yeah, it's up there. I know beat it for the largest R-rated opening weekend.
Right.
But yeah, I'm curious to see how this does in the long run, considering Solo is coming out next weekend.
Yeah, and I'm starting to take back what I said on the previous podcast about Infinity War making it to $3 billion or whatever I said. I don't think it's going to do that. It's dropped off quite a bit.
Really?
I got the 24-day totals of Avengers and The Force Awakens. 24-day total for The Force Awakens was... Oh, this is, you know, this is domestic also. 24-day total for Force Awakens was $812 million, and the 24-day total for Avengers Infinity War is $595 million.
Wow, that's surprising.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big drop off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, the Avengers movies, I feel like, have always been kind of front loaded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got that spectacle appeal, and actually it's only $4 million more dollars than Black Panther's 24-day total.
That's crazy. I mean, it's still just crazy to me how big Black Panther was. That's insane.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was huge, but I think it makes sense given, like, the cultural, like, movement around this. When you have Kendrick Lamar curating a album for your movie, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, like, you've reached gold.
a nice cultural moment.
Yeah, and it helps that movie was pretty good too, pretty solid.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Michael B. Jordan is having a good moment right now where everyone is realizing that he's an amazing actor.
Mm.
And Chadwick Boseman is a guy, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a nice rebound for Michael B. Jordan after Fantastic Four, which I'm pretty sure was the last superhero movie he was in.
Yeah, definitely. Oof. Definitely a good bounce back.
Yeah.
All right. I don't really have anything else to say. We'll talk about Deadpool a little bit more.
About Book Club, but
no.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Let's talk about the new Mowgli trailer. So it's not The Jungle Book 2. It's an entirely new take on The Jungle Book. I know what you're thinking. They just did Jungle Book like 4 years ago.
But here's the thing.
And you're right.
Warner Brothers loves public domain.
They love that money.
This is gonna
be, you don't have to pay.
Oh my god, this is gonna be this year's Legend of Tarzan. I feel like this is gonna bomb hard.
It just doesn't look like, it looks like the other one.
Yeah, but like slightly darker. Like I kind of like the color palette. I think is a little prettier in this one. But man, the CG I think looks way worse than Disney's.
Yeah, and I just like, it's got the same like level of actors. I'm just like, why did they do this?
Yeah. Man, competing companies. Yeah.
But
what a weird decision. I mean, I do feel kind of bad because it's Andy Serkis's directorial debut.
Oh, he's directing it?
Yeah, he's directing it.
Oh, I'm sad.
Yeah. And I feel like even if the movie does end up being good, nobody's going to want to go see it.
Yeah. And I know what you're all thinking. The Jungle Book didn't come out 4 years ago. It only came out 2 years ago. And you're right. We're only two. What the?
Yeah.
The LA Times puts it perfectly. Mowgli trailer reveals grittiest Jungle Book reboot since last Jungle Book reboot.
This one does not have Bill Murray voicing a bear, though.
Yeah, and the Jungle Book made almost $1 billion.
Holy crap, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize, like, I knew it was successful. I didn't realize it was that successful. Jesus.
Yeah, it made a lot of money.
This is not going to make close to $1 billion.
This will make tens of dollars. Isn't that, oh my, this is just, you know, I don't know. Just
I feel like
stupid.
Yeah, I feel like this was just a thing where they're like, yeah, this is already in development. You know, if we stop now, we're just going to lose money. We might as well push it through, get any income that we can, and then move on. I feel like they know that this is a loss for them already.
Yeah, they're already writing off on their taxes right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's like, that's all I really have to say about this movie. There's like nothing particularly interesting about it other than like Benedict Cumberbatch voicing a tiger.
Yeah, and I don't think people will want to see a Jungle Book movie that looks like the Jungle Book movie that's already on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, be like, hey, you want to see that Jungle Book movie? Like, oh, that one from 2 years ago? No, the one that we can see for free, like right here, of course.
But
it's not like the new one.
This one is like, you know, I think rated PG-13, so it's even less kid-friendly.
Ooh.
Yeah, so edgy.
Jeez, that's what I want out of a Jungle Book movie.
Yeah,
I want it to be called something, not Jungle Book. And like the fact that they have to call him Mowgli, that immediately in my brain, I'm like, Mowgli, that's Jungle Book, right? Like,
I was really hoping there was going to be a subtitle to it, like Mowgli, the Jungle Book story or something like that. The untold
Mowgli,
story
the first
of the Jungle
Book. Yeah. Are they doing a Jungle Book 2?
I think so. Oh, no. Yes. Well, I think they're doing Jungle Book 2, but first Jon Favreau is doing the live action Lion King. Which I'm actually pretty excited for because Donald Glover is voicing Simba.
Yeah, I don't like how they say, like, oh, live action, like, what do you,
it's
going to be
like 30%
CGI
live action.
Animals.
There are live action elements, which qualifies it for
like
live
they
action.
They film, it must be weird to film that movie because you're just filming it. You're just, like, taking pictures of places.
Oh, yeah. Well, have you ever seen the production stills of, like, this most recent Jungle Book or, like, Life of Pi?
No.
That's, literally the one dude in a blue screen studio holding like a stuffed blue tiger with like just a face drawn on it and having to act alongside that. Like, ooh, that's got to be a weird school of acting to get into.
That's got to be like every actor must fucking hate that.
Yeah,
because imagine going to work every day and you're not working with people. You're just working with stuffed animals and everyone's like, pretend they're people. And you're like, but they're not.
It's your job
like,
to pretend they're people.
Right. Like, okay.
Pretend this is a tiger.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah.
I mean, hey,
that's
Avatar was
off.
Considered live action.
Well, at least it had actors like acting. And they just inserted them into, you know.
Yeah. We have one actor acting for this.
Who?
I was still talking about Mowgli, I guess. I wasn't talking about The Lion King. Yeah, I guess there are no human characters in The Lion King. I don't know. I don't even know if. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to consider that live action.
Yeah, there's not like they're not going to get Donald Glover to like act like a tiger. Like, he's going to be in a booth talking to other people.
No, I hope he does the motion cap for Simba.
Yeah, the mocap for a tiger.
Yeah, I want to see. I bet you John Oliver would do the mocap for Zazu. I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, yeah, but I no, because he's old. Like, he
all he's got to do is he's just got to move his arms. Be the most jankiest 3D model, 3D bird model you ever see.
Oh yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, I don't even want that. I just want regular animals fighting.
Yeah, look at that. You want the golden compass.
Yeah, you know, I never saw that.
Well, polar bear gets its jaw ripped off.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I don't need to see it now.
Yeah, I spoiled it for you. Moving on.
Moving on. Let's go. I mean, I guess like we can still keep talking about Netflix. News just came out today that Barack and Michelle Obama of White House fame have inked a deal with Netflix.
Is that where they're from? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they were pretty big in the constitutional law circuit, but not a lot of people are into that anymore.
Not as mainstream as other celebrities we talk about on the show.
Yeah, exactly. So they just inked a deal with for seemingly anything that they want. Like,
yeah, like the deals were super vague.
It's like, hey, you can you can produce anything. That's really what it is.
You can give us money and we'll make something with your name on it.
Yeah, you like docuseries, you like scripted shows. I would be interested to see the first. I feel like it's got to be documentary stuff. Like, there's no way that Obama is producing like a sitcom with Martin Short.
He's producing the anti-Roseanne.
Just any other comedy, like,
yeah pretty much. I want to see the first Obama produced anime. I just want to know what that would look like. I know Netflix produces anime. Throw Obama's name on it.
It would be like Afro Samurai.
Oh my god. If Afro Samurai becomes president.
It'd be a legal drama in the style of Afro Samurai.
It's just an anime West Wing.
Oh, hold on there.
I think we're onto something.
Yeah, I should tweet at Obama.
I'm going to tweet at Obama and Netflix.
At the same time. Please, I have an idea. It involves Afro Samurai and the West Wing. Please
just hear me
don't
out.
At me. Yeah. Please DM me.
And I don't want anyone taking these ideas. Of this sneaking out, yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested. I don't really have anything to say about this.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of info, but curious.
It's got to be some like boring ass like Ken Burns thing about like Reconstruction era South. That's what we're gonna get.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he produces like another Ava DuVernay film for Netflix, because I know she did 13th, so I could see her coming back and doing another film for Netflix.
Oh yeah. In a previous podcast, we said that, or at least I did, that Netflix had signed a deal with Ava DuVernay, and it was actually Shonda Rhimes. So
you're a racist.
Please send your complaints to the care of Brian Williams at NBC. I will say that every podcast.
Jesus, it's a good fallback joke.
Anytime anybody does something wrong.
Brian Williams, head of complaints department at Viewing Angles.
Yes, he is strapped for cash, and no, we won't give him any more. All scraps from here on out, Brian.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
All right, well, let's just keep going on. This one is actually pretty interesting, that Jake Gyllenhaal is in talks to be Mysterio in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I've heard conflicting reports that he's in talks and that he's been confirmed. I'm not sure which one to believe yet.
Well, if you read the AV Club, which you shouldn't because it's garbage, they fucked it up and immediately, like, I read Deadline, I read Hollywood Reporter, I read some of the more bloggy stuff, but... the Hollywood Reporter came out with it saying, hey, Jake Gyllenhaal is in talks. And then AV Club picked up and was like, Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be in Spider-Man 2. And I'm just like, oh, you trash liberal mag.
Trash Cloud Person magazine. Fuck you.
Yeah, I only read the actual trades. That's where you get the real information.
Yeah, the real grit.
When you get out in the blogosphere, you start to like realize that anybody can do this. Oh, wait, I shouldn't tell them that, or they'll all do their own podcast.
Yeah, they might start their own podcasts.
Oh, fuck.
We can't afford to be
the only movie podcast. Please don't. But anybody can review anything. And so when you have like things like the AV Club, which I'd say it's pretty like a well-known.
That's owned by The Onion, right?
It's owned by Univision, which owns The Onion. Yeah, they're all the same company. Hmm. So it's like Univision owns, you know, Gizmodo, Kotaku. Oh, yeah, because
they bought the Gawker properties. Jezebel.
Yeah, they bought all the fucking trash.
Damn.
Yeah, I don't know if AV Club was a part of the whole like Gawker thing. I think they might have been just The Onion company.
Yeah.
And then Univision bought all of them.
Oh, wow.
And put them, it's like, hey, remember how Gawker was shitty? Well, all of you are going to be shitty now, too.
We got their blue pins when we bought them. We're just going to use them again.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. The AV Club is, ever since the election, it's been just like not, it's just like a,
I mean, there are a lot of sites like that.
Yeah, it's like, hey, remember how you liked watching, like, reading recaps and reviews of TV shows as you watch them? Well, here's political commentary.
Here's why the show isn't anti-Trump enough.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, God,
stop.
Leave the political reporting to people who have been doing it their whole lives.
Yeah, like Brian Williams.
All I want is hot takes and not actual reporting.
Yeah. I guess that's what Twitter's for. But yeah, so back to the topic at hand. I'm pretty hyped if this actually does go through.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see Jake Gyllenhaal in the superhero sphere. And I was also interested to hear that Michael Keaton will be back.
Oh, I hope so. I think he was the best part of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, and I think he was really underused too.
Yeah.
Like Michael Keaton is, I really like him and all of his stuff, but I felt like they didn't really flesh him out. He just wasn't on screen a whole lot.
Yeah.
But every time he was, I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah. This is what I came here for. Yeah. I'm hoping, he gets more screen time. It's interesting that Mysterio is supposed to be the villain, because I thought that at the end of Homecoming, they were setting up Scorpion to be the next villain, because that's who that guy he met in prison was, with like the Scorpion tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure they're going to do three villains.
Oh, yeah. They're going to pull an amazing spin. They're going to do this, and they're going to try to spin it off into Sinister Six spinoff.
Yeah, exactly. They're like...
second time's the charm.
Yeah. Yeah. If Marvel was just like, hey, Sony, remember how you fucked this up? Well, check this out.
This is
proceed
how you
to
do.
Make like a billion-dollar franchise out of the Sinister Six.
Well, so that deal is weird, because I think Sony still has control over what they do with Spider-Man. It's just Marvel gets to use Spider-Man in their films, because like they're making a Venom movie, and I don't know if Marvel had any input. I think that was just Sony.
Yeah, I think they have the rights, and I think that's them trying to be and they were saying that they've been really kind of weird on if it will exist in the MCU, like Spider-Man universe.
Yeah.
Like if Tom Holland Spider-Man exists,
apparently, like Tom Holland is in the movie. They like IMDb credits him as being just Peter Parker in this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Sony's gonna fuck up the entire timeline for Marvel.
Oh yeah! Wow, a fucked up Marvel timeline. What's that gonna be like?
Right?
Fox is over here like, we've been doing it for years.
Yeah, at least Fox doesn't claim that they're part of the MCU now. But yeah, they've reset the. the timeline, I think, twice now.
Oh yeah, yeah, twice. Well, yeah, if you count Deadpool 2,
oh yeah, three times.
Maybe they've reset it three times.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of funny, because that's like the most comic book thing you can do. So you can make the argument that the Fox movies are like the most comic book movies out there.
Oh yeah, and I would make that argument, especially since they're. I really like the Fox Marvel movies. Yeah, the X-Men movies is what I'm saying.
I don't know if I like all of them. I like most of them.
Oh yeah, I like, you know.
Yeah.
pound
like
for
the,
pound.
I like the good ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think pound for pound, I like the Fox ones more than I like the Disney ones.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I do appreciate the risks Fox has taken with the properties, though, that I don't think Disney will.
Yeah, and that's part, you know. One thing I'm not a huge fan about Disney, like owning them all, is that Disney will never do something that will not make a profit. Like as soon as these movies stop becoming profitable, which one day they might. They will stop making them.
I don't know if Fox has ever done anything that isn't profitable superhero-wise.
That's true, but they definitely take... You can look at the Fox movies and see that they're taking more risks in terms of tone, in terms of like what they're showing.
Yeah.
And then I feel like every... All the Marvel movies in the MCU feel very like a similar formula and like, okay, here's the bad guy. All right, they're going to fight. Oh, yeah, there it goes. Yeah. Yep, okay, they did it.
Yeah, I also think that's why Infinity War was so affecting. It's because it didn't follow that format.
Yeah, and that was just like movie number 20, right?
Pretty close. It's up there, yeah.
Yeah, so it feels like the Marvel movies are never reaching for anything higher than just like a nice little story.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like that's what I appreciate about, you know, even the Fox or like the Sony, the comic book movies that are not under Disney. It feels like it now that Disney's taken that over, that they've reached which is why, never mind, I don't even want to get into that. But I think that Disney is making these franchises a little bit more like mass produced feeling.
Homogenized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The homogenization of culture.
Disney's bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal and as Mysterio. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Go. Let's do it.
Yeah. I'm ready. The only thing that could get me excited about Mysterio being in a Spider-Man movie is the words Jake Gyllenhaal will be playing him.
Yeah. And he's going to be wearing a fishbowl.
I hope to God he will. I hope that
Bubble Boy too.
I hope that Jake Gyllenhaal plays. Shut the. I hope Jake Gyllenhaal plays Mysterio, and within the first like 10 minutes, they set him up to be like this insane like villain, and then like 15 minutes later, Spider-Man just punches him out.
Yeah,
right away, and throws Jake Gyllenhaal in jail.
And they bring Michael Keaton back as like the real villain.
Yeah, something like that, or they do Scorpion or something like that.
The only thing that would get me more excited about Spider-Man 2 having Mysterio is if instead of Jake Gyllenhaal, they had David Blaine playing Mysterio. They just have him like, and they don't even use special effects. They just have him design all of his own illusions.
David Blaine is the least expressive person that is on the face of the earth.
Yeah, that'd make for a terrifying villain. Be like you're trying to fight a computer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hey, David, yeah, he is just like the color gray in terms of personality.
Oh yeah,
like I bet he's a fine guy when you're talking to him, but he's always just like, yeah, no, and then I just put this needle through my hand. Yeah, you could watch it. Yeah, just watch. Yeah. It. No, it's fine. He just got such like a calm demeanor as someone is like shooting him in the face. Yeah. Like,
dude, I bet you if he tried to mug you at night, you would think that like the void is talking directly to you.
Yeah. Oh god, that'd be.
give me your wallet.
Yeah. Hey, give me your wallet, man. What?
You don't want to know what happens okay. If you don't comply.
Yeah, and then a knife appears in your stomach and cuts through you.
You puke up a knife, you puke up bullets.
Like, what are these? And he puts the bullets in the gun and then he shoots the knife into you.
Dude, a David Blaine crime movie would be amazing.
We could write it. Let's get
let's pitch that to Netflix. Maybe Obama can produce it.
DM us, Obama, please. Yeah. All right. The last thing we'll talk about is this City of Lies trailer, or as I like to call it by its soon to be title, City of Lies, the biggie small story. Featuring Johnny Depp and Forrest Whitaker as two guys who won't solve the murder. Like, that's. Yeah.
Some lies are bigger than others.
Kill yourself. I think that. Oh, Biggie. So.
Oh, Biggie. Why?
Oh, Biggie. Why? Why? Oh, why? I think that this movie will be bad because I think it's very difficult to make a good movie about a crime that's never been solved.
Yeah.
And I think Zodiac is the only one that I could think of where I was like, even then, at the end of Zodiac, you're still like, wow, they never found him. Like,
yeah.
But there were so many other things in that movie to keep you go, like, to be entertaining and to be dark. And it was almost an added like terrifying moment for you to be like, oh, they never caught this guy.
Yeah.
But for this, it's like,
it's just the end message of the movie is going to be like, the LAPD is corrupt. And it's just going to be like, no, like, fucking shit, Sherlock.
Spoilers. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen Crash. Yeah. I know that. You think you can culture me? I'll culture you right back, boy.
Oh, Matt Dillon.
Mm-hmm. Thandi Newton is in that too.
Oh shit, she is.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And here I thought she was only in Westworld.
And the best Mission Impossible movie.
Was she Mission Impossible too?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
She played the girl.
Oh, the girl. Dude, yeah. I guarantee you the only thing I remember about Mission Impossible 2 is the length of Tom Cruise's hair and the doves.
The best part about Mission Impossible 2 is when they bring in Ethan and it's like, why can't he talk? He's like, I broke his jaw. Oh, and it's like, you can still talk if you break your jaw.
And then they fucking shoot him and then they like pull the mask off and it's like, oh no, it wasn't.
Yeah, it's the wrong guy. And then it cuts to Ethan just running in slow motion through like a hallway.
Through that stone tearing hallway. Off his face. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I remember more about that movie than I want to.
It's a great movie. But let's move on.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about City Lies anymore. You got Forest Whitaker flipping a table. You got fucking Johnny Depp smoking cigarettes and wearing a mustache.
It doesn't look good, and it seems like it's just relying on how good those two actors are, which I've seen Out of the Furnace, and I've seen Black Mass, so I know they can both be in pretty mediocre movies.
Yeah. Never saw Black Mass. Saw Out of the Furnace.
Black Mass is better.
Oh, okay.
But only because of Johnny Depp, and it's only about him.
Mm.
Oh, and Joel Edgerton is really amazing in that movie.
Isn't Benedict Cumberbatch in that too?
Black Mass?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I thought he played like somebody's brother. He's like a corrupt politician. I don't know.
Maybe he isn't it. I don't know. I just Googled Benedict Cumberbatch instead of Out of the Furnace. Which would be a much worse way to find out.
Man.
He's got his own Wikipedia article for his filmography.
Oh, Jesus. Perfect. It's kind of funny how Mowgli. Forrest Whitaker can go from looking so old to
he was in Black Mass. Oh, Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah. Because he looked pretty old in Black Panther.
Yeah.
And this,
he looked pretty young in that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Just being an actor, one of those actor things. I'll never understand.
Yeah, being able to transform into like a different type of person.
And talk to blue stuffed tigers.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen Rogue One, I get it. All right, let's go right into the review. After much deliberation, let's go into the review of the week. Bring, bring, bring. And this week we're talking about Deadpool 2. I saw it. Robert saw it. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
All right. First impressions, Robert.
First impressions. I think it's fun. I think if you liked Deadpool 1, you're going to like Deadpool 2. But I think that Deadpool 1 was more memorable.
I agree. I think it's that classic sequel syndrome where you're like, that was like the first one, just like a little worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there were things. I do think, like, I appreciate that it went, in my opinion, a little more out there. Like, it played with its comic book source material a little bit more than the first one did.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, this felt way choppier than the first one, too.
Yeah, it felt like it was getting pulled in a lot of different directions. But there is this is going to be a spoiler-free review, but there is one sequence in the movie that I think is funnier than anything in the first one. And you know what I'm talking about. It involves the X-Force.
Yeah. That was pretty fantastic. I'm not going to say anything, but man, I was losing it in that sequence.
And it gets more insane and insane with the surprise cameo, which is one of the best things in any movie I've ever seen, I think.
Okay. Oh, God. I wish we could talk about the cameos, but you can't without spoiling it. Shit.
Yeah, the cameo is, I mean, there are some cameos. Did you catch Matt Damon?
I did.
And Alan Tudyk?
Yeah, I was going to say it if you caught that, but I didn't want to say the name because I didn't know if, like, that was a spoiler. But
yeah, spoiler. Matt Damon is in heavy makeup in one scene.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't recognize him until I looked it up on IMDb.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Alan Tudyk, I was like, is that Alan Tudyk? And I'm like, oh, definitely. I mean, let's just get straight into it. Like, Ryan Reynolds is still great. Josh Brolin is pretty good. Yeah. I mean, Josh Brolin is mainly jacked in the movie.
Yeah.
He doesn't really do as much.
He plays a good straight man. He's a solid foil to Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool.
Yeah. And I think one thing this movie does well is that it kind of expands the roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's much more of an ensemble piece. And I like that. I'm pretty into that.
Yeah. I really like Domino, just because I really like Zazie Beetz. Yeah.
Yeah, Zazie Beetz, she was a highlight.
Yeah, I saw her. I hadn't really seen her in anything until I started watching Atlanta. And then when I learned that she was going to be Domino in Deadpool 2, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm there. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, she's great. If you don't, Zazie Beetz, she plays Donald Glover's love interest, his baby mama, really,
yeah.
in Atlanta. And she's great there. And she's also pretty great in this movie, too. And just... I think there were a lot of parts that were firing on all cylinders. The Kid Apocalypse storyline didn't really resonate as much with me.
Yeah.
I couldn't get behind why Deadpool would really give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, they used his... I don't even feel like I can talk about that without spoiling it.
Yeah, they have a... I mean, one thing that I will give this movie credit for is that the trailers paint the picture of a much different movie.
Yeah.
And they kind of paint the Kid Apocalypse story as kind of the emotional crux, whereas like in the first one, it was more about his wife, girlfriend, Dealey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Vanessa in the movie is. Yeah, that what her name is?
Vanessa.
Marina Baccarin, however you say her name. And so in this one, it kind of takes that and puts it on this Kid Apocalypse. Like, instead of it being a woman, it's a kid. It's like, oh, kids.
Yeah. It's like, oh, he can be attached to people.
Right, exactly. And I think that is a often difficult part of comedies, is when they really try and anchor it emotionally. Because if it isn't like that throughout the entire work, as in, you know, a lot of comedies, they just kind of shoehorn it in at the end of the second act.
Yeah.
And it feels really out of place and doesn't work. You know, if you just have a movie that's like straight jokes, you don't get that emotional fulfillment, but I think you get an ultimately funnier movie. But I think that while the execution of this emotional aspect of the movie wasn't as good as it could have been, I think the end result gives us something to work with going forward,
yeah,
which is something that I would have never expected, really.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the R-rated X-Men. It's the R-rated comedy X-Men.
Yeah, and I thought the jokes were all pretty on point.
Yeah.
I love the, they do a James Bond opening.
That was pretty cool.
Which is pretty amazing.
And then just the, like the credit jokes, you know, they were there in the first one, but they're pretty funny in this one too.
Oh, yeah. The credit jokes were good. I love James Bond, so it was a great homage for me. And the, if you haven't seen it and you're planning on seeing it, please, for the love of God, stay for the credits.
Yeah, that's a must. I think that might have been one of my favorite parts of the entire movie. That was fucking amazing.
Yeah, the whole fucking...
It was so good.
It involves Deadpool going and correcting the timelines.
Yeah.
That's all we'll say, but those are some spicy moments. They're great.
I also really enjoyed the... totally unexpected, but like this, it's a straight up Rick and Morty joke, if you know what I'm talking about.
I can't place it exactly.
Do you remember from the Interdimensional Cable, Detective Tiny Legs?
Oh yeah, did they mention I mean, or is that just, there is a Tiny Leg scene. Yeah,
just that entire fucking sequence, I was like, holy shit.
the Basic Instinct reference. Yeah, but There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I think it does a good job pretty much all the way through of being entertaining. And but this one, and I was tweeting about this, that it feels like when the first one came out, it was like, here is like the antidote to the superhero thing, and I was like, yeah, okay, sure, why not? And then when I saw it, I was like, no, that's a legitimately like fun movie and like entertaining on its own right. And then Deadpool 2 is, I felt like, much more reliant on the fact that they're, you know, we're at peak superhero movie.
Yeah.
Like, we almost, I think we all wanted Deadpool 1 and found out it was so good. This one, I think we needed Deadpool 2. I think it'll end up being good for the Marvel movies down the line.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
but
kind of get that fatigue. Because the Marvel movies always, they're witty. They're kind of funny.
Yeah. But they're not, but like, they're not self-aware funny. In the same way Deadpool is self-aware.
Yeah. And the way that Deadpool is committing to a very fucked up comedy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which
more
is pretty
fucked
great.
Up than the comics, which is pretty surprising.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's
man.
I just keep thinking of the very last scene from the end credits.
Yeah.
The very, the blood.
<It's for Chicago. laughs> On the screen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
God damn it.
So it's great. I really enjoyed it all the way around. There's a lot of things to pick through. I'm excited to see it again.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna see it again. You know, thank God for MoviePass, but I wouldn't have felt bad paying full price for this movie either. I do think though
definitely
that
not.
Deadpool 1 is gonna be held in a higher regard down the line, and I think it's gonna be just easier for people. You know, this isn't like a Dark Knight. Nobody's going to be going back and
right.
being like, oh, the second movie in the franchise, that's the one we have to watch tonight.
Yeah, but it's also not a Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that's going to be Deadpool 3.
You mean X-Force.
Is it? Oh, man, if they actually just call it X-Force, that'd be pretty cool.
I wonder if... Yeah, because I think they've said that they don't think they're going to do another Deadpool movie.
Oh, okay.
And they said, like, I think the next, you know, I think Ryan Reynolds has been quoted as saying that if they do another one, it could be an X-Force movie or something like
yeah,
that.
I hope so.
So there is that potential, you know,
yeah,
taking some the characters left at the end and making a movie about them could be interesting.
Yeah. Hi, Yukio. Man, I just want to see Deadpool again now.
Yeah, no, I like
what a good that, what a
it'll
good
be a
time.
Good, it'll be a good double feature, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's when you could easily go right from Deadpool 1 into Deadpool 2. You're gonna have a great night.
Yeah, it's yeah, very like nice and light, and the comedy keeps going. The Wolverine jokes,
those are great. Just the fucking opening of the movie was hilarious. Just the very first shot of that little music box.
It's like, yeah, it is. And I think that I saw, like, part of me was thinking that while the movie was going on, that it's a little too, like, current almost.
Yeah.
Like, there were some references that as soon as people were saying them, I'm like, nobody's going to have any idea what that means with like, 5 years from now.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Jared Kushner line. There was something else.
Oh, my God. I forgot that Jared Kushner line was even in the movie.
Yeah, and that's where I started to think, like, man, are people going to know who Jared Kushner is, like, later?
Yeah, yeah, like, I feel like this movie is going to feel a little more dated than the first one, but that makes it more fun to watch now.
Yeah, I felt like there was, like, a very, like, topical reference in it.
I mean, there were a lot of very topical references in it.
Like one that I was like, wow, they must have, like, wrote this, like, the day they shot it.
Oh, yeah, like, I wonder how many reshoots they were doing before this came out, as they were just checking their Twitter feed.
Yeah, apparently Ryan Reynolds was like rewriting lines up until like shooting.
I see it. I could see that.
Yeah. He is a funny guy.
He is a funny guy.
I'm very, very happy that it happened. So overall, I would say film wise, fuck yourself. Like, and flick wise, see it, dude. See it in the theaters. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Don't take it. I think there's some people who go into it and they see it as, I don't think Deadpool thinks it's that clever. Like,
no,
I
yeah.
think that I think it's kind of like, here is some like toilet humor, like real crass, like we're gonna get into it. But I don't think it like says it like, oh, only like smart people will get this
yeah,
movie.
Like it knows it's not being written by fucking Jonathan Swift. It knows exactly the jokes that it's trying to make. I don't understand why people get upset at, like, you know, when they're trying to outsmart the humor of Deadpool.
Yeah, I'm like, this is shooting way closer to like a Judd Apatow movie than like a
I would say even
British,
like
a British farce.
Yeah, like a Judd Apatow. Maybe even I would go as far as like a Mel Brooks comedy in some points.
Yeah, a lot of like, you know,
very violent and slapstick.
Yeah, very violent vaudeville. That's
very violent vaudeville. I like that. Vaudeville. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, so Flickwise, yeah, go see it. And yeah, I guess what I was trying to say is don't take it too seriously. It's not a movie that you're going to come out and you're going to have a new way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
It's a movie where you can come out and you can say, hey, remember that part? That part was really funny. Yeah, like, yeah, that was really funny.
It's
a movie
that's like endlessly quotable and that you can laugh with your friends about.
Yeah. If you can't see it in the theater, see it when it comes out on Blu-ray or whatever you use to watch stuff.
Yeah.
Because this is definitely a movie that I will see again probably pretty soonish.
Yeah.
And continue to talk about. I love it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it thoroughly too. Again, as a film, go fuck yourself. As a flick, highly recommended. Go see it. It's not a movie that is prone to, you know, over analysis, unlike the next film I think we're about to talk about.
Yeah, it's. I'll even say this. It's better than at least 80% of the MCU movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least. And now we'll be talking about the 20% that no, we're not. All right. Well, we're going to shift gears now and we're going to talk about this is our feature is going to be classic review. It's going to be in this is for the 50th anniversary of 2001 A Space Odyssey. It came out in 1968 and is 2018 if you haven't checked. And so it's been 50 years since this came out. I actually got to see it just yesterday. I saw it in the I saw the 70 millimeter print unrestored, so exactly how they saw it in 1968.
How was that?
Nothing like restored or anything.
Yeah, the decolored version. I saw Christopher Nolan was working on that.
Yeah, it was the one that Christopher Nolan worked on. And so I got to see it in the theater around people I didn't know and frankly didn't like. And it's an experience. Like, I immediately we're gonna just jump right into it. Immediately when I saw it, I was just you know, the images were beautiful and they held up very well.
Mm-hmm. See, but I want to know, so that movie was originally shown in it wasn't 70 millimeter, it was what was it, Panavision, right? I forget what exactly the aspect ratio is for that, but it's the theater screen actually curved around to the audience a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Man. And that's the format I would love to see it in at some point.
Yeah. I mean, do they even make that anymore?
I don't think so. And it's like, I think that was like a movie palace thing. And I'm pretty sure movie palaces died in like the '70s.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a little too bad, but yeah. I mean, still seeing something in 70 millimeter is pretty amazing. You still get that like bigger, like quality.
Oh yeah.
Like seeing it pretty like wide, and it just, you know, it looks better. I'll say I think the biggest problem that people have with film is the noise on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like little, you know,
film grain
static. Yeah. Little film grain. And if you can get over that, it looks better.
It looks better. It looks more cinematic.
I think it really looks like really good photography, and the fact that like this movie was made in 1968 and I'm watching it and it looks as good as anything that's coming out today. Like,
man, I wish I could see this in theaters. It's not playing anywhere around me, but it sounds magical. How was the color though? Cause that's like, I think the aspect of the, I guess not restoration, but like the decolorization that everyone was talking about.
Yeah, and so I had never seen it before, so I've got really nothing to compare it to.
Oh, you've never seen 2001 at all before?
Yeah, correct. Oh, wow. So this is it was pretty amazing that the first time I was able to see it.
You got to see it in theater. Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's great. Yeah, that's the only thing I have on it now. Thank God it was in a theater, though. I would have fallen asleep probably.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later. But the color, everything looked amazing. You know, it's hard to like it. It was very, even during the initial shots of, you know, the sun coming up over, you know, Africa or whatever. It was very like beautiful photography that you could just look at it and be like, this looks, you know, I don't need anything going on in these frames. It just looks beautiful.
Yeah, man. And just that score, that iconic score that people just parody out the ass these days.
Yeah, that's it was epic. I'd say the only thing was that seemed a little cliche, which of course it seems cliche because this is the
it made the cliche
is it's like the da 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 da.
Oh yeah, when you're in space and it's like
in the space. I do not remember what the piece of music is called.
Yeah, I do not remember either. But I know exactly what you're talking about, and that is cliche now because of 2001.
Yeah, it's almost funny. Like it's almost funny when it came on. Just like, are they really doing this? Yeah. Like, but everything. I mean, it still looked good, and the sound was so loud. Like when they have that, you know, that ambient, like the people, the voices, like oh,
yeah, like when you're coming up and you see the planets like align.
Yeah, and it's got this, you know, it just gets so loud, and you can feel like everyone's getting like kind of uncomfortable in the theater.
No, dude, it's like all that's what it wanted. Yeah,
yeah, they really draw you into it. And so I'm gonna, I guess, just give my like first impressions off of it, since this is a true review from me and more of a retrospective for you. Yeah. So you can jump in whenever you want. The structure of it is interesting, of the four different parts. Mm-hmm. But holy shit, it is everything that I love about Kubrick and everything that I hate about Kubrick in one movie.
Yeah, it's the most Kubrickian film, I think.
Yeah, and it's like, I saw it in the original. It was about, there was an intermission. Mm-hmm. It's about 2 hours and 40 minutes, and about 40 minutes of that is probably just nothing happening.
Yeah.
There is a lot of, especially in the... I could almost cut out the entire second act of it if it's told in four acts. The second part where the guy is just on a spaceship and it's like, let's go to the moon.
He's just eating food and watching news reports.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, okay. And then it just, and like, all right, when's the movie that I heard? Like the starting, I saw the whole monkey part and that was interesting. But it went on for a really long time, like the discovery of tools and all that.
And the monolith.
Yeah, the monolith, which is, that's something, all right. And then this other part is just kind of like this guy, I don't know why I needed to know anything about I didn't need to know anything about him. Just keep it going.
I feel like that's...
I don't need to see 10 minutes of just space shit.
That's kind of how I feel about like almost any... character in a Kubrick movie. Is the characters are never what drive the film in a Kubrick film to me. It's always about, I don't know. I want to say the film itself, but that sounds pretentious and dumb.
They're plot driven.
They're plot driven, but I think they're also, I guess, visually driven. I think there's a lot of visual storytelling and a lot of visual parallels that Kubrick likes to employ that make it more interesting as a film to analyze than interesting as a film to watch in a theater. I feel like they're like puzzle boxes, but not like a J.J. Abrams puzzle box. Like the film itself is the puzzle you're trying to decipher.
Yeah, exactly. Not just a bunch of like random things to kind of sort out.
Yeah,
I think there is like a structure to it. And he approaches making the movie the same way that he would approach, you know, like painting something, of like, not, you know, this is ostensibly what it is. It's about space. It's about all this. But there is definitely something else going on here.
Yeah,
which is all in that last part.
Yeah, I feel like when most people think about 2001, they think about like the third act.
Yeah, no, they think about Hal.
Yeah.
They think about the back half of the movie.
The Star Baby.
Yeah. And Steven Soderbergh actually has a cut of this movie. I think he trimmed it down to like an hour and a half or something. Huh. And I have a copy of it, but you can't get it anymore. Yeah, there are only spurious means of getting that. Let me I want to see if I can find out exactly how long it is. But the point is that it's a lot shorter, and I can see how he did it and I can see why he did it.
Yeah. I wonder how Kubrick feels about that.
Who cares? He's dead.
Yeah, he probably feels pretty dead about it.
Yeah, it's an hour and 50 minutes. So he cuts about like an hour off of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious to see what he cut.
Yeah, I've heard like Soderbergh will do these things where he'll like re-edit movies or something, and like it was such an interesting guy. I love Soderbergh is like my favorite. I do like Soderbergh
a lot. I think he's done some great films, but I think there are times where he can get a little egomaniacal.
But yeah, how so?
Just like, I don't know, he seems like one of those filmmakers that's like, I'm doing avant-garde shit just because I want to stand out. Like, it doesn't seem like it's actually doing anything meaningful to push, like, whatever art he's making forward. It's just like, mm-hmm. I can, so I will. Which is fine.
I think he's definitely, like, we think of some people as, like, innovators. He's trying to innovate on such a high level that he is totally okay with making something that is complete dog shit.
Yeah, like Solaris. Like, you think you're going to outdo Tarkovsky? Okay. Okay, Soderbergh. Calm down.
I mean, he has like entire like films that are entirely improvised. He has a film about a porn star playing an escort. Like, yeah. He has done these things.
I mean, his most recent movie, Unsane, was shot entirely with a phone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the kind of stuff that he's into. And I like that he is pushing the boundaries of what a movie can be in its maximalism and its minimalism. I was saying like, hey, a movie could just be you and your friends improvising in front of an iPhone. That can be like, yeah, of course. You know, that's a good way of thinking about it.
I don't know if he's done anything that falls into like the maximalist school of film, though.
I mean, I'd say like something more like high concept, like Traffic or oh man, I'm really drawing a blank.
I mean, he does have pretty big filmography. I'm trying to think of I don't know, I've lost myself in his filmography, can't pull any examples.
Magic Mike, something more like Contagion or like the Oceans movies. You know, those are like pretty, you know, the fact that the Ocean movies exist of like, hey, let's get all these famous people and put them together. I think he.
Okay, yeah, I guess in that sense, yeah, I was thinking of more like
like an epic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think no one's ever given him like $400 million to do anything.
Yeah.
But I think that he does good work and I'm happy, you know, and if you haven't seen The Nick, it's a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. See it.
Yeah, The Nick is great. Yeah, I like Steven Soderbergh a lot. I think he's a great director that can pivot really well from like blockbuster director to small little indie film director, I guess.
Yeah. That's good. Speaking of great directors, let's get back to the one that we're talking about.
Yeah, the dead one.
Yeah, the dead dude. But besides, like, so it brought me to the edit that Soderbergh did. That brings me back to just thinking about the movie as there is a lot of things that are superfluous about it, but I think that is the aim of the movie, is to be much more sprawling than this movie could easily be a story about a space station where the computer tries to kill the astronauts.
Yeah.
And that is it. That is what the story could be. And I think the aspect of the monolith and what that means is the crux of the movie, is about.
But what does the monolith mean? I have my own theories, but I want to hear what a first-time viewer thinks the monolith means.
Right. What I got out of the monolith is, and for anybody who hasn't seen the movie, see it, period. And and the monolith is a big rectangle, big smooth rectangle made ostensibly out of marble or something like it, that shows up, that is obviously like extraterrestrial. And it plays a big role in each of the four, three out of the four acts.
Yeah.
It's not really in the third act, the mission to Jupiter. But I think the monolith is it's a metaphor. It's either a metaphor or it's real. And it's about,
it can be both.
Yeah, advancing cultures to the next stage of evolution.
Yeah.
It's like the impetus for things to enter the next level. at the beginning, you see the monkey. As soon as the monolith shows up, it's like, hey, tools. And they grab the bones, and suddenly they can kill the jaguar, the cheetah, whatever was trying to hurt the monkeys.
And then each other.
And then they can, and then they can kill the other monkeys that are messing with them. And then you get it at the very end, is that you say that to me, that's releasing humanity of the idea of time. Usually when we see really advanced life forms, I'm thinking like in Kurt Vonnegut, like a lot of different sci-fi.
Yeah, it's like an ascension to another dimension where time is just literally a physical construct in whatever dimension they exist in.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't see time the way that they see time as like a geography rather than like it starts here and ends here. And I think that is what the last part is trying to tell us. Star Baby, I don't know about yeah. Star Baby.
I mean, I think Star Baby is just supposed to be like our next stage of evolution, I guess.
Yeah.
But man, yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty spot on. I think that the monolith stands for, you know, it's like the crux of our evolution. But in my opinion, mm-hmm. I think that it's also a pretty direct metaphor for like storytelling and how storytelling is, I guess, the impetus of creature evolution.
Wait, so you think that the monolith is just like some MacGuffin that's just like, why is this happening? Because of the monolith. Like,
yeah. I mean, I don't think we ever really get like, I haven't seen the movie in a couple of years, but I'm pretty sure we don't get like a pre-wrote explanation of what exactly the monolith is doing for these creatures that causes them to evolve. It's just, it's there. And then evolution happens and the audience has to draw the causes between those two associations themselves.
Yeah. I mean, there is the, you know, the radio waves being, I guess it's like, are they being guided to a wormhole or something? Is there some kind of alien intervention? We don't really know. And I think you're left to kind of assume based on some stuff that's going on.
Yeah. I also just think it's interesting. There are little tidbits that I've read around the internet about 2001. And one of them that I think is kind of cool is the monolith is the exact aspect ratio of, I think it's like 2.31. I forget what exactly, but it's the exact aspect ratio that the film was shot in. And I feel like,
really,
coming from Kubrick, that's meaningful in some way.
Are you going like room 237 on me where it's like, it all has meaning. No, the typewriter is about the Holocaust. So,
okay. There are good theories. And one, room 237 is a fucking terrible movie. What? I don't know how that got good reviews from anybody.
You think it's terrible? I think it's hilarious.
I mean, it's hilarious, but it's so fucking bad. Like all the people on there that are like, if you look at the poster in the back of the room, it's like a skier, but his legs are bent in a way. It makes him look like a minotaur and the hotel is like a maze. So this is just a retelling of Greek. This is Kubrick's Greek mythology. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Or like how, you know, when I forget the hotel owner's name, turns to shake Jack's hand and, there's a file cabinet that's poking out directly in front of his legs that makes it look like very phallic if you pause at this exact frame. I'm just like,
yeah,
no, I'm not supporting any of those theories, but I do think that Kubrick did like to encode meaning in the images of his films that I think require a little more digging than just like looking at this and like what is the composition of this film. I think that there are details in there that he wants people to discover.
Yeah, no, I think I would agree with that. And it's so interesting that I feel like the third part of the movie is very, it's almost like a completely different movie.
Yeah.
In everything.
There's like actual tension.
Yeah, there's tension. And it's, to me, that's the part of the movie that's, you know, obviously the whole is worth watching, but to actually get excited about and to be like, you know, really taken in with, really disturbed by is that, that third part. And that brings me like to a very interesting experience that I had in the theater. It's weird seeing being in a theater with a bunch of people who've already seen the movie and I have not. So you got some like some laughs and some weird space.
Were they fucking like quoting it?
No, they're just okay. Like as Dave was going to, when he gets back into the ship,
yeah,
and he's going to take care of Hal, and Hal starts like, Dave, please don't do this. Like, it's like, I don't think this is a good idea. Everyone's kind of like laughing. Yeah. But then as Dave goes up to start, you know, murdering Hal, yeah,
pulling all of his drives out,
it gets quiet. And it's like, Dave, like, I can, you know, I'm hurt. This hurts me.
Yeah.
Like, please, I can feel my mind. And everyone just starts getting really quiet and it gets like really tense. You're like, this movie, like, even though this is such a well known parodied, like, almost of a bit at this point, it's still, and people are like laughing when they know that, like, oh, this robot's trying to save itself, but it can't get away from the fact that it fucked up royally. Yeah. It's like everyone is still like real tense when it comes down to the murder of this artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a testament to the execution of the idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
oh yeah. All right, I'm gonna go room 237 on you for a second again.
All right, hit me.
So, another thing, something that is of, I think, symbolic significance, is the shape of Hal and the monolith are also exactly the same. Like, not Hal's like red eye, but like the entire shape, those are exactly the same.
Right.
And to me, since the monolith represents like evolution, I feel like Hal, represented, at least how I interpret it, a different path that humanity could have taken in terms of its evolution, like evolving in like the artificial intelligence kind of way, whereas the blank monolith that we've been following throughout the movie represents like the evolution into the space baby and entering the fifth dimension.
Yeah, it's like a organic evolution versus
technologic evolution.
Yeah, and I
think
exactly.
That is pretty interesting, actually, now to think about it, because technology's always played a pretty big part in our evolution, because, like, you know, in the opening of the scene with the monkeys, those bones were the first technology that they had.
Right.
So I think it's interesting to have the monolith kind of like just whisk Dave away.
Yeah, and you wonder that if maybe everything had gone the way Hal wanted them to go, that Hal would have been the one to go through
and evolve.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, they still don't really give a good explanation for why the hell did the things that he did.
Yeah, AI.
Yeah, AI malfunctioned, but it had never malfunctioned before.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe he came into contact with the monolith or saw the monolith before the astronauts did, and so that's what caused him to start acting out in some, like, I don't know, self-aware acts.
Yeah, I don't know. It's what I like about Kubrick is that when you watch his movies, they're not as accessible or as entertaining as some other movies by other directors, other auteurs, but his movies stick with you, I think.
Oh yeah. I think all of his movies are haunting.
Yeah. Despite, you know, the way that I feel about even like The Shining, like, I'm not a huge fan of The Shining. I think it's pretty plodding at points. But it's still like, you know, the imagery just still like sticks with you.
Oh yeah.
And there's a reason why his movies are classic and also like slow and kind of boring. Like, there is a certain like level of, once you're like getting through it, you're like starting to, I think that it hits you on a subconscious level.
Yeah. And just super, super methodical in the way that he filmed. I wish, oh man, I wish I just could have been on like a set with Kubrick. Apparently he was like,
apparently not. Apparently you would not have wanted
to. Well, not to be working for him. I just wanted to see it.
Yeah, just to see him work. I'm sure there is a documentary that his daughter made on the making of The Shining.
And it's not room 237?
It's not room 237. It's room 236.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think Kubrick movies are fun. If you have friends that are fucking film nerds, I think they're more fun to watch with. Like, I would never watch a Kubrick movie with like a friend who wasn't really into film, or like a family member or anything like that, where I couldn't just like nerd out and throw my theories at them the entire night.
Yeah, no, definitely as like a film, this is like top tier. As a flick, like, never,
never,
like,
never. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, this is the polar opposite of Deadpool 2. Yeah. while still being good. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that's a good place to end it.
Yeah, I don't have. I mean, I think there's a lot more to say about 2001, but oof, we'd be here for hours.
We could talk. You know, we could talk for like another few hours.
Yeah,
probably just about that.
We'll do a live stream of 2000, like just Kubrick in general discussions at some point down the line. Tweet at us if you want that to happen. Make sure to mention Brian Williams in your tweet.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Call him.
Tag him.
Tag him. Hashtag. Please love me. I don't know. Hashtag.
So creative. So subversive.
You're like
the next Banksy.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, there you go. What is the next movie that we're going to be watching, Rob? I think it's going to be
Solo.
So stick on with us for next week. We'll be talking about Solo, and I'm sure you're going to love all of our good hot takes.
We're going to have the hottest takes. Bring your fucking oven mitts next episode.
Yeah, exactly. I think they should do the rest of the movies, but like gender swap them. I think they should have Emilia Clarke playing Han Solo and Alden Ehrenreich playing whoever she is.
I want Chewbacca playing Lando.
There you go. I want Lando playing everyone.
I want species swaps. Yeah, give me Donald Glover. Give me like the Dr. Doolittle of Star Wars movies, but with Donald Glover playing every character. Or sorry, the Nutty Professor.
The Nutty.
I got those Eddie Murphy movies.
You're
confused.
Getting your Eddie Murphy vehicles mixed up. Which is a cardinal sin in my book.
Okay, I think it's time to go. I don't know how I recover from that.
It's easy. I'll help you out. Well, thanks for listening. Viewing Angels. See, I did it your time this
time. Thank you.
We've had a great time with you here. And please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, at Viewing Angles. We're not on Facebook. We're on Instagram, at Viewing Angles again. Yep. And check out the website. ViewingAnglesPodcast.com. I have been your host, Dan Leo. Follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show. Follow me on Letterboxd at DLeo. Please just, tweet at me. I'm so alone. Please. And this is my other host, the B host.
I am the B host. My name is Robert Mecki, and you can follow me on Twitter at Robert Jr. JR. Follow me on Instagram at the same handle. And the same handle for Letterboxd, because I value consistency in my life.
What's that like?
Oh, it's kind of disappointing.
Oh. Well, all right. See you next time, Viewing Anglers.
Got him.
Bye.
Bye.